There is no tiptoeing into the unknown. Welcome to the future of medicine, where disease is no match for tenacity, no match for ingenuity, where together we go boldly. Learn more at goboldly.com.
Good Saturday morning. I'm Jake Sherman, and welcome to the second bonus playbook audio briefing episode from our live taping Thursday at 6th and I Synagogue. Today, our conversation with the New York Times' Michael Barbaro, host of The Daily, the most downloaded podcast in the United States this year. We talked to him about the creation of The Daily, some of his favorite episodes, his daily routine, and what's coming next with this flagship franchise. Tomorrow, we'll post our discussion with the DCCC's executive director, Dan Cena, and the NRCC's executive director, John Rogers. Subscribe and rate our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
And now the man you are all waiting for, I imagine, Michael Barbaro, who hosts the wildly, wildly popular The Daily podcast for the New York Times, is here from New York and is more stylish than any of us. Give him a round of applause. Anna, he got some exciting news today.
Oh, yes, you have to talk very close.
Yeah, sorry, you have to.
You're very comfortable with this, more so than even we are.
Here we go. Oh, that's a good idea. I didn't think of that.
You want your face to be seen by the audience.
Okay, now you can take photos, I guess.
These things move, yeah.
The Daily is the most downloaded podcast in America this year. So that news came out today from Apple. So he deserves more than a round of applause for
thank
that.
Thank you, Jake.
We are going
to
get
the Daily, the other way to start your morning.
The Daily and Playbook complement each other.
Absolutely.
There you go. That's an official endorsement. let's talk about your career. You've had a fascinating one, which included some time in D.C. as an intern at some point, didn't it?
Yeah, right out of college, I was an intern at the Washington Post as a business reporter.
And so take us through kind of the steps and stations of your career.
All right, I'll move quickly because people's careers can be lethally boring. But but it began as a newspaper carrier in North Haven, Connecticut, which is the truth. So I had newspapers in my life for as long as I can remember. And I was a reporter at the Washington Post for several years as a business reporter. I didn't ever want to be a business reporter, but I highly recommend it to everybody because it's...
What an endorsement.
Because it's actually the way to understand the world through numbers and data. And I made my way to the New York Times by covering retail, which ought to be patently obvious. I covered the
He's
world
He's a stylish
of
dude.
Yes, you can't see it for the listeners, but very sartorial.
I'm pointing at my suit.
Yes.
And so became a business reporter at the Times, and then began covering politics of all kinds. The mayor of New York City, Mike Bloomberg, the governor's races of Andrew Cuomo, and then inevitably was drawn to Mitt Romney, of course.
I mean, the allure.
And truly, though, that was when I began... My first presidential campaign was covering Mitt Romney in a very unique role, which was biographical profiles of this guy. And it's the kind of nuance that often gets lost in politics, but spending months really churning out long-form pieces about who someone is pretty good preparation for actually what we're doing today with The Daily. And then another presidential campaign, the last one, 2016, and that's my fondest memory of you, which was falling asleep behind the wheel. I was falling behind asleep behind the wheel of a car in Des Moines, thereabouts, on a long drive with Eli Stokols, and I asked you to drive.
Did you drive?
Yes.
Were you falling asleep?
I clearly am superhuman and don't need sleep. That's why I was very fit for this job.
So
I should keep going. And then somebody at the Times had this idea for a podcast.
Who was that?
Her name is Lisa Tobin. She came from Boston Public Radio. Times decided that someone should be hired to create the voice of the New York Times. And, of course, podcasting had been going on for quite some time. There are a ton of shows out there. But nobody had ever envisioned a daily on-demand news show. And what we mean by that, of course, is that if you get in your car and you turn on National Public Radio, it's there. And if you listen to a podcast, it's not really news, and it doesn't come out five times a week. So this was a unique idea. Five times a week, 20 minutes, a news show. And we needed to figure out what that sounded like, and they needed to find a host. And I was not the first person they came to. I like to tell this story.
Yeah, I love to tell this story.
That was Nick Confessori, the handsome MSNBC contributor and New York Times reporter. And he said no. And it was the best decision he ever made.
For you.
And then they turned to me. And I began hosting The Daily. We figured out what it was going to be.
So how did you figure out what it was going to be? Because it reminds me so much of your reporting. I don't know if any of you have read a lot of Michael's stuff. It's nuanced. It's rich in detail. It's kind of, you were always, we would be at these same rallies and you'd like see these details that no one else would see. And then they would come up in the paper the next day and I'd be like, ah, oh, damn, I missed it.
I'm sure you didn't miss it, but that's nice of you to say. I mean, the idea was that we had 20 minutes to fill. And we've storyboarded it, and we like played with all the elements, and we decided to basically turn the idea of a news show upside down. The headlines usually go at the beginning of a show. On The Daily, they are at the end of the show. Usually, you're going to just skate through maybe three or four or five stories. We decided maybe one or two stories a day in great depth. And instead of kind of incrementally telling you what's new about a story, We kept saying to ourselves, what's really flawed about daily journalism? And one of the biggest answers we had was that stories don't really start at the beginning. Today, you need to know this about what the president did about DACA. Well, what the hell's DACA? I mean, so the show presumes, in the most enlightened way possible, the reality of people's lack of knowledge and how busy their lives are. And it says, why do we pay federal taxes? What do they get used for? What is Boko Haram? And we start a story really at its beginning, and we tell a narrative version of the news. And that's a pretty new idea. So we'll ask Maggie Haberman or Peter Baker to set the scene, to start something at the very beginning, whether it's a congressional hearing or, you know, the whole Trump presidency, and we'll tell the story.
So one thing that, and our boss, John Harris, always says to us that when Playbook is at its best, it's like 60 minutes. So it's not only the story, but you're watching reporters.
And do their job.
Right, like Mike Wallace when he was chasing down guys. And that's awesome. So, and you do that.
Yeah, we do that.
And that's kind of cool. So talk about that. What's behind that and why do you do that?
Well, it started accidentally. I mean, we'd be in the studio and somebody would come on the microphone in Washington and would just do something weird. They would make a joke. In the case of Maggie Haberman, she sang. She started singing this wonderful old ballad, and we just never told her we'd recorded it.
Nice.
And actually, it's a great story. That night, I know Maggie very well. And I know her rhythms and her rituals, and I know what can get her upset. And so at 10 p.m., I sent her a text saying, Maggie, we recorded you singing a song. It's going to be the Tomorrow's Daily.
Oh my God.
I hope it's okay with you.
Knowing Maggie, I know that must have been a fun
conversation.
Yeah,
there was like a what? She got really, you know. The idea, though, is that the raw interactions of reporters, another example we used, Mike Schmidt talking to us about a big scoop he had in the Russia investigation from a Kinko's. And he told us that he was in a Kinko's and that he'd borrowed the phone from the guy in the Kinko's. And listeners heard that interaction and they heard him talking about it. They could tell he was in a Kinko's. The quality of the connection wasn't that great. We realized that people like understanding how reporting works. And they like the transparency and the rawness that provides. So we decided not to cut it. And so the kind of thing that would immediately hit the floor, you know, and be cut from a All Things Considered or Morning Edition, we decided, like, we're going to keep that. And it turns out that listeners found that really distinctive.
We'll be right back with more of our Playbook audio briefing, but first, a word from our sponsor, Pharma. There is no tiptoeing into the unknown. Now is the time to put the accelerator to the floor. The best is yet to come, like advancements in personalized medicine and immunotherapy, and it's coming faster than we can imagine. Welcome to the future of medicine, where disease is no match for tenacity, no match for ingenuity, where together we go boldly. Learn more at goboldly.com.
That's a perfect transition into our favorite question that Anna and I hate answering, but we'll make you answer as punishment.
Sure.
Tell us about your daily routine.
My daily routine? Well, the New York Times still has a 9:30 meeting. It's kind of as old as time. It's a news meeting. Someone shows up. It's me or someone in our team. And we still rely on that as the kind of engine of our show and what's happening tomorrow. And from there, we break into teams and we start writing these incredibly elaborate scripts. The secret sauce of The Daily, if you ever listen, is that we don't leave a lot to chance. We have very meticulously prepared sets of questions. We have an idea that we want to try to arrive at or a chronology we want to establish. And then around 2 or 3 in the afternoon, we get in the studio and we start recording. We just recorded with Yamiche Alcindor. And I can't give away the second segment, so it's exclusive.
Okay.
And but of course, you know,
you're already the most downloaded podcast.
Help us out.
And then the night really gets started. It's a very, very long night.
So how much is it completely done for the night?
No. People are back in New York making the show, and they will be working on it. They could be working on it till midnight. And then the call I get, whether I'm in a hotel room or at home at midnight or 1 a.m., is, you know, after editing for a few hours, we realize we need you to track just this one line. And so I get under a blanket, and I record under a complicated little contraption.
We have one of those, too, and we've done it in, like, airport lounges and,
it's the least sexy thing you can possibly do.
I did it sitting in
it's also the least sexy possible use of a bed sheet.
That's true. I've done it in a bath, with no water.
Record, right?
Yeah, like because my wife was asleep in bed or something. So, yeah. It's weird. I get it.
How many people, though, are part? I mean, Jake and I do a 4.5-minute podcast every morning, each in our homes. We track it ourselves. It's kind of a two-man show with Zach, our producer, who without him, it would never be, and none of this would be possible. But you must have so many people to get 20 minutes.
We don't. The show started with 4 people, which is why we often pulled all-nighters. And now we have about a team of 9, maybe 10. So it's a very lean operation of hyper-creative people from the world of public radio and podcasting, and they just work really hard.
I'm curious about your personal experience, because one of the things that we... with Playbook and now with the podcast, is people feel a real intimacy.
It's incredible.
With you and people.
They wake up with you and they feel like, you know, they're in their pajamas, they know you.
And it started with when Mike Allen did Playbook, and it's transferred over to us, and people feel like they can come to you and you know them, and you're like, well, who, just help me out here. So do you have any of those experiences?
Actually, I know all 100 million of the download people of the show. I'm surprised, Jake, that you don't.
We're not doing our job, clearly.
I mean, yeah, so there's something about audio and being in people's ears, right? I like to say, you know, what do you listen to on these earbuds that we all now have in our lives? You listen to your favorite song over and over again, or you listen to your favorite podcast voices in your ear. And so this is like extraordinarily intimate real estate that we occupy. And the moment that I discovered just how powerful that was when the emails started to come in from listeners of The Daily. They had such a confessional quality. People do still in these emails talk about where I listen, when I listen, what it means to me. Like the dark 5 a.m. car ride to work when they cried, because we do a lot of very emotional narrative storytelling on our show, and The Daily can literally smack you across the face on a Wednesday or a Friday. Instead of being a news show, it turns into kind of a documentary narrative show about, you know, assisted suicide or Boko Haram's war crimes. And we like to not tell people what they're going to get that day. And so people have very, very intimate responses to the power of that kind of story.
How have you kind of evolved, though? I mean, it's one thing to be writing a narrative about somebody else, right? But this is also intimate for you. You've had, you know, kind of emotional responses to some of the stories.
Mm-hmm. I have cried on the show.
Yes.
That helps.
Yeah, what's that?
That helps with the downloads, I think.
No, but like, I mean, what is that? Did you have to get comfortable in that space of intimacy, of say, like kind of revealing yourself? I think you've talked about Tim, you know.
Yeah, I've talked about my husband, yeah. Yeah. It just sort of happens. When you're in a studio for that long talking to somebody, having such a long, intimate interview, eventually your defenses kind of melt away. And for me, it would be hard not to be emotionally invested in some of these characters. I don't cry on the microphone with my colleagues. That has not happened. I have had my colleagues completely break down, but just one or two.
Yeah.
So this is a question that a lot of people get, but did you have to work on a radio voice?
It's such an interesting question you asked that. I like to say that I went through like a re-pubertization. because what happens is if you listen to the first 6 months of The Daily, this is what it sounds like. From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. And I go back and listen, and I was like... And what happens is over time, the producers were like... They would make a very specific hand gesture to drive down my voice. And it got to be this. From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. And like they literally do a thing. Like it's like, find your gut, find your center. And it's so weird. And the weirdest part was suddenly I was talking that way. And I was like, who is this? The radio voice becomes the real voice. And I don't know what's... what part of my voice is the organic thing that existed before the daily.
What's been, you know, of all the episodes, obviously you've been doing a lot of them every day, 5 days a week. Is there any that stand out to you that you're most proud of or that was moving to you?
This might be an interesting response, but I happen to have just gone through a list of the episodes because we're arriving at the end of the year and thinking about which ones we're most proud of. And I'm really proud of an episode that we did very early on that was, I believe, the first real effort in audio to tell the entire James Comey 2016 election saga from start to finish. And it happened before he was fired. And Matt Apuzzo, my colleague, who had been working on a giant piece about this, just he made James Comey so human. And this is a guy who does not want to be known, but through all the details and the accumulation of events in his career, you could tell that this was a person racked by anxieties about what the world thought of his decision-making and was being so careful and meticulous in his mind to be moral, and it all just blew up. And it was such an incredible saga, and there were moments along his career that if you watch closely, you could see all these foretastes and warnings that something like this could happen, no matter what you thought of him. And so I was super, super proud of that. It was the first time we also went way past our 20-minute commitment to listeners. It was a 30-minute episode.
But that's kind of a freeing thing about audio. You don't want to, I don't think you want to abuse it, but when we started doing the daily, our daily briefing, it was because someone said to us in our newsroom in Roslyn, like, I would really like when I walk my dog to be able to listen to someone read playbook to me. And Anna, my response was like, okay, well then hire someone to do that. And
you want to do it? Us.
And then we said, okay, we'll do it. And we tried to do it in 90 seconds, and we got a great response. And then we're like, okay, we can.
But 90 seconds is nothing.
I know,
but now it's crazy, because now it's like 4.5 minutes. I mean, it was 90 seconds.
The ambition, this sort of packaged ambition of a lot of shows is we will be a 10-minute summary of everything in sports, or we will be a 25. And then you actually say, audio is incredibly hard to make. If I do an hour, if we do this interview for an hour, and you try to cut it down to 20 minutes, that could take 10 hours.
Yeah.
And the hardest part is cutting something. It's just really hard.
So the question in every newsroom, and we get it all the time, is what's next? So you've now created a 5-episode-a-week podcast.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Do you think about going to 7?
No, we don't. I think we've publicly announced.
I'm going to send this to Dean, the executive editor of the New York Times.
We created a 6-day-of-the-week show called The New Washington, which was really meant for people in this room. It was a show about Washington, and we were really amazed at how many people, especially Republican lawmakers, agreed to come on this show, people who we expected to be a little skeptical of it. And that was a lot of work. And it expired. And we're not jumping up and down to do another 6-day-a-week show, but we have publicly announced we're going to do a weekend show when we're ready, because it's just so much work. So eventually we'll have a show on the weekend that will have a distinct feel from The Daily Show.
And what does that look like?
But you're really, really pressing this competitively.
Yeah. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good. I don't think we're prepared to talk in great detail about what it is, but I believe it will draw upon kind of the extraordinary wealth of feature writing at the paper. You know, the Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, Thursday and Friday have like a certain urgency built into them. It's the weekday. You know how it feels. I think the weekend show wants to feel like you're sipping your coffee and you're going to hear a real story, and there's not the kind of like Donald Trump did X and the world did Y, and so it'll be different.
Well, good. I think that we are getting the wrap here. But Michael, thank you so much
thank
for taking
you.
The time.
From New York, came to us down here, so we're very, very appreciative
thank you both.
Of that. And thank you to our sponsor, Pharma, and thanks to all of you. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.